May have seen him recently on public television. He had a series called Gene Shepherd's America back in 1971. I caught Gene Shepherd myself a few years back on what he corrected me also. And mentioning, I said WLW, which to us was always the our large broadcast in the South. I said WLWT. Of course, we had D here, C over in Columbus, and I guess in Indianapolis. And we did check a little bit when I told him that our only particular reference to those call letters was WLW World's Lowest Wages. Gene seemed to relate to that somewhat. Anyhow, he left Cincinnati, went into other things. And I think the latest, he hasn't cast something in the water up in Maine this spring, down off the coast of California. I would imagine perhaps the episodes that have returned now, and I understand there's 10 new episodes. Are they still calling it Gene Shepherd's America, Gene? You're afraid so. Well, obviously, it was good in 71 and he's back. He was here several years ago and he's back. And I think anyone who speaks before an audience and gets invited back another time feels he's wanted. And I think you all will join me as we welcome back for at least the second time and hopefully not the last, K2ORS Gene Shepherd. Come on, let's hear it, for God's sakes. That's what I want to hear. By God, I'm a very sensitive performer. Anyone who's worked me on 20 know how sensitive I am. By the way, you know, before we do anything else, this is my third appearance here on the podium to entertain you here at the Hamvention. And I consider that a privilege, really. I've worked a lot of shows in my time. But this is the only show that I know of where I can look out over this vast sea of faces and know that there's an entire room full of people who have the same curious madness that I have. Have you ever asked yourself, why the hell do I do this? For hours I sit here talking to some yo-yo in Idaho that I wouldn't give the time of day if I met him on the subway. Damn radio, strange. It's almost like being a member of the Rosicrucians, an arcane religious order. And when Jim and Jack here invited me, I'll tell you how I was invited, to show you the power of the Hamvention. Several months ago, I am squatting in the jungles of Guam. I'm shooting a TV show. And I am playing a GI. I have a steel helmet on, old pair of battered fatigues. And I'm deep in the jungle, surrounded by thousands of very rare tropical insects. All of which are flesh-eating, oddly enough. No matter what the hell they eat when there's nobody there. And boy, they're going at me, and I'm sweating. The temperature's 115, and I am playing a GI. Now, many of you have been GIs. And in this episode, I am playing a GI who was a sergeant in the Signal Corps and went ashore in Guam in 1944 with the second wave, and he's been in the jungle ever since. He's got his handy-talky, his World War II crank job, and he's never gotten the word that the war is over. He's just waiting. Well, there I am playing that character deep in the jungle. We have $400,000 worth of camera equipment that's being eaten by mosquitoes. They eat Betamax gamma. You don't know about the tropics. Leeches are coming up the tripods. When a runner comes down the beach, he's a Chamorro Indian. He's running. He's sweating. He arrives in the clearing. He says, exactly what happened. And the director is standing there. He's sweating. He says, damn, we got to get this. We kept trying to clean the lens off. And it was a tough shoot. And this Chamorro runner comes up and he says, message, message. And he has a message. My director looks at him and says, what the hell is this? And he hands it to me. And the message said, and I quote, the Dayton Hamvention call. They want you to speak this spring. I said, holy shit, how did they know I was in the jungle? So I turned to the chamorro. He says, what's Hamvention? It's very difficult to explain. And so here we are tonight, all sitting here, linked by our quarter wave antennas. In fact, today, I'll tell you something I shouldn't tell outside of this room. I went to a restroom today, as many of you have done today. And you know, all the appliances were all up against the wall there. Some guy stands up next to one, three appliances down from me, and he's talking on a handy talk. I look down, see? I says, Christ, what kind of madness am I in, Shepherd? Well, I'll tell you, this kind of craziness even follows into areas you would never suspect. Here, a few months ago, I'm sitting with a man who is one of my oldest friends. He's a network vice president at CBS, in charge of sports, a very official guy. But he's a crazed ham. And we're having a formal dinner. And over here to my left is the president, believe it or not, of Columbia Motion Pictures, and his wife. These are distinguished people. Sitting over here is a high-level guy from the DuPont Corporation and his wife. And down at the end of the table is my host and his wife, and they are everybody's host here. And he is sitting there talking into his TR-2600. I said, for God's sakes, Charles, stop it. He startled, looks. He said, I'm keeping the schedule. I said, but Carl, you've got a schedule with us. We've come for miles to sit here and break bread with you. He said, yeah, but this is the New Jersey Net. I said, oh, yes, that's important, of course. All these ding-dongs riding along the Jersey Turnpike, you know. And I said to Carl, I said, Carl, I'll tell you what I'm going to do. The next time I come to your house, I'm going to bring my TR-2500. And we will sit at each end of the table and talk. On simplex. And he says, that ain't a bad idea. His only life consists of sounds coming out of this one-inch Japanese speaker. Well, now, of course, we all understand. That's why you're laughing, because you're all into this madness. Well, how it started with me, I was thinking what to do tonight. Now, how many of you heard my other two shows here at Dayton? Oh, those were some evenings, weren't they? I'll never forget. Ever since those nights, guys will come out on the air to me on 20 meters, and a guy will come on and he'll go, he'll recognize my call. See, and I'm trying to be official. It's K2ORS here, 5 dBs over S9, here on my 130S. You'll come back to me and you'll go, doo, 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 doo. Now, for those of you who don't know what the hell that's about, I was a kid, see. One time I'm working the kid scene. Now, I heard Judy talk about children and all that. Well, I was one of those kids who was absolutely, for some reason or other, completely turned down by ham radio. Now, there was no reason for me to be turned down. Nobody in my family had no idea what it was. Mr. Bruner next door would come staggering up the back porch, throw up into the hedges. And he'd hear me working CW. He'd look around. He knew goddamn well he's getting the DTs now. He's hearing chickens. So that's the kind of neighborhood it was. See, I grew up in Hammond, Indiana, the toughest city this side of the Barbary Coast. It took gonads just to be a kid there. The magic word got somebody over there. Crash! Now, I thought tonight what I would do is to give you a show based on amateur radio and its relationship to sex. Would you like that? All right, I'll do it. Now, I'm a kid. I'm 12. You know what happens when you're 12 years old? Your glands begin to blossom. And it's a crucial time in your life. You could go one way or the other. You could go on to become a raging success in this life. Or you can take that path down towards the darkness that leads inevitably to a flea market. How did you screw up? What brought you here? You could have done so many other great things. Instead of standing there looking at 10-year-old transformers with shorted windings. Why are you doing this? Well, maybe it's sublimation or something else. As a kid, I'm 12. I got really into ham radio. Well, I'm in school. And all the other kids have got geography books. This is actually what happened. They're sitting there reading geography. Mr. Melton's class. And in the geography textbook, I had the Q&A. I am carefully analyzing tri-tet oscillators. I'm mastering AB1 modulation systems. How many of you in this room know what screen grid modulation is? Well, see, when I became a ham, amateur radio was romantic. Now it is technical. The very opposite of romance. I'll give you an idea how romantic it was. Even the equipment had romantic names. For example, the Sky Buddy. Now that's a great name for a receiver, the Sky Buddy. The only problem with that receiver, though, it was the only receiver that I ever saw that if you walked across the floor in a room, three rooms away from where the Sky Buddy was working, it would drift 200 KC. That was the Sky Buddy. But it was romantic. How about this one? The Hammerlund Super Pro. There is a name with gonads. By the way, isn't it symbolic that the ham of the year here's call is ACE? Ace. Somewhere way out in the darkness out there is W3OAF. K1PIG is way over there. The names you get will indicate what you shall be. Ace. When I'm a kid, my call arrived in the mail, and I'll tell you, I went crazy. Now, I was so innocent, I hadn't even bootlegged. That's an innocent little orphan Annie reader. And I studied, and I got my call, and I had built up this 6L6 oscillator with a Bliley X-cut crystal. It was a circuit that had appeared in QSD, and it was called the QSL-40. The rig was the size of a QSL card. Now, don't laugh. It was all that I had in the world. It had taken me years of delivering the Chicago Tribune, slogging through the mud at 4 a.m. to throw Colonel McCormick's editorials on people's porches. And he had tough editorials. The paper is the only paper I know that would bounce three times and go through a screen door without even finally got this rig built, and I went to Allied Radio in Chicago. I was growing up in the Chicago area, and they had a great store. And, you know, I'd get the catalog every year, and boy, I just read. I read everything. I read even all the sizes of the grommets you can buy. And I'd read them in the John, you know, 5/8 inch, 1/4 inch rubber grommet. Wow. I'd love to have one of them. I don't know what the hell a grommet was. I thought it was some kind of a Swedish donut or something. Well, there I was. I got my ticket. And I had been anticipating this for days. See, I got my rig all, it was all, I built a 66-foot Zep out of speaker wire that ran back of the garage. A half-wave Zep on 40 meters, fed with 600 ohm, truly unbalanced line. I took two pieces of lamp cord and ran it down and put clothespins between it. I had an SWR that was astronomical. Now that I look back on it. Now, the rig ran about roughly 7.5 watts input. You can imagine I had an SWR of maybe 300 or 400 to 1. God knows what I was putting into the actual antenna. It didn't matter. That first night I got on the air, and I can remember calling CQ on 40 meters. Now, I had bought a crystal because, you know, the one fear that I had was that I'd be out of the band. Now, the band was 300 KCY. Went from 7,000 to 7,300. So I said, I'm going to go right in the goddamn middle right there. 7182. I still remember that frequency because it twisted my whole life as a hand. I could have got 7149. I could have got 7228. But I picked 7182. It is little things like that that caused the great iron door of life failure to close on. You never know when that one moment comes in your life when you fatally screw up. I got home, I plugged in the crystal, tuned up the rig. Boy, it was great to see my ammeter. I had a 100 milliammeter meter flicking down. It was actually tuning up. And I tuned this rig up, incidentally, with a neon bulb. How many of you ever tuned a rig up with a neon bulb? Right, I have a thumb that has a permanent hole in it. An RF burn that went right through the bone, right out the other side, and got me on the shoulder. And so you put a little loop of wire, and I tuned in this son of a gun up there. I read it was on the air, and it was 7:25 at night, because I remember putting it in my log, and I called my first CQ. 40 meters. Historic moment. I'm going to sign my call for the first time. Get my license out again. My voice is being heard throughout the world. And then when you first get your ticket, you call a 2.5 hour CQ. Then I finally signed. I'm really excited. Turn up the gain on my Sky Buddy. And the background comes rushing up at me. And I heard for the first time the voice. W5HH. He owned that son of a bitch of a frequency. (laughs) 7,000 watts. On the air 24 hours a day. One of the first clear channel ham stations. And he would just come on and blow you away like flies, mosquitoes. And whenever you hear a usurper on his frequency, he would just come on. Oh, Jesus Christ. Cans would fly off. And he'd just sign his call once and go. 300-400 stations would come back. Now, I could not afford another crystal. So automatically, I knew from that instant on, there are two kinds of hams. There's the heavies, and there's us. Right? Now, the heavies, by the way, know everybody in the world. They work some guy in Monrovia. I said, "Hi, Ernie, how's the wife? Dog okay? Is he all right? You get him back from the vet?" Christ's sake. They know them all. And down there, if you've ever turned your receiver up, any of you people, you know, in between the signals, you hear all that noise way down, the crabgrass of 20 and 15. That's us. Well, I'll never forget my friend Bob. I think I told this story, but somebody said, tell it again. One of the greatest hams I ever knew was an Ohio ham. He was also one of the have-nots. All of my life, I have never run over 80 watts. It gives you a special perspective on the world. You're looking up all the time. There's Mount Olympus. And up on the top of Mount Olympus is a 300-foot tower with a stacked array, full-wave beams. Imagine a full-wave 80-meter beam. Thousands of feet long, just moving. Oh, that's the kind of hand that I see in my dreams. And I'm down there in the basement apartment in a condo that does not allow you to even have a screen door that squeaks. Trying to work whatever's on the air. Well, as a kid, see, I didn't know any of this. This all came later. I was 12. I was idealistic. I believed anything was possible. And my friend Schwartz, the two of us were going to the Warren G. Harding School. Now, can you imagine, already at the age of 12, we did not realize this. At the age of 12, we were going to a school named after the worst president in history. Till now, of course, there's been a few others. Can you imagine some poor little lout going to the Richard Nixon School? He doesn't know. Now, we didn't know who Warren G. Harding was. It was his name in the school, Warren G. Harding. Had dollar signs coming out of our school emblem in the auditorium. It said, "In hoc agricula conc, in est spittle lauk," under it. Indiana, they really seriously like Latin. That means don't spit on the farmer. Now, me and Schwartz were beginning our career, and it was years later that I met the first hand that struck back at the they. Now, you know these guys that are always... These are the guys that are born already with a DXCC. Before they get their ticket, they've got it. Working on their second one. On 2 meters. Jesus, you know what? You want to hit them, you know? Well, my friend was furious. For years he heard this say, W8PVF. One night, I'm down in his basement in Cincinnati. These two 80-watt aces. Now, Bob was a really good technical hand, but he only had about 75, 80 watts with a homemade VFO. And he had as the final tube a TZ-40. That's a beauty. Taylor Craft tube, and it glows, by. But that's part of the romance of that type of equipment. As a matter of fact, the first ham I ever saw had a window in his rig. And it had 866s behind it. And he turned the lights out in the shack, and when he talked, these babies would flicker. He was putting out a full gallon on all bands at 6,000 additional frequencies. You know, I'm looking at 35 T's in the final. The plates would glow red and flicker when he talked. And there I am at home with my 6L6. So Bob, WAPDF, one night, we're standing in the basement, and he's got his receiver turned up, and it's 40 meters CW. You can hear all the really big guys are working tonight. DX is coming in. And, of course, my friend, he's got LUs, VKs, ZSs clinging to him like barnacles. And Bob says, listen to that bastard. I said, yeah. So Bob's got his 70 watts at the high end of the band. He said, you want to try something tonight? And I said, yeah. He said, you're game. I said, I'm game. He said, you won't tell anybody. I said, I won't. And so he reaches under his power supply with the rig off, turns it over, takes a pair of clippers, and clips the leads of all of his filters. Flips it back down on its back like that, and he tunes it up, and you heard this great sound in his monitor. At which point, then, he begins to detune his antenna coupler. He's only got 70 watts to begin with, see? And he's way at the end of the band. He's at 7296. And he starts to call CQ. Now, there's a certain way that really heavy DX calls CQ. That Roy sees drifting out on the 40-meter band. And as he does so, he slowly turns his VFO towards the band edge. He's drifting. And he drifts another case. And you could feel the band shifting. And then he slowly turns down his antenna coupling to almost zero output, and he signs. He fades out. And you hear a stunned silence at the edge of the van. And then he slowly picks it up again. He led over 200 guys to 7,400 that night. All these heavyweights were all down there, you know, their tongues hanging. Who ever heard of an XL, for Christ's sake? So I salute him. He struck a blow, and I could see that great blizzard of pink slips dripping. Bad man, right? Well, as a kid, see, I'm 12. Now, this is when the moment of real truth came to me. Schwartz came to me one night and he said, "Chef," I said, "Yeah." Now remember, I was spending my entire life in the basement, which is the way most hams begin life. The others are out playing second base and you're down there getting the complexion of a fish. Your glasses are getting thicker by the minute. You're getting that, by the age of 18, you're the oldest 60-year-old, 14-year-old kid in the neighborhood, you know, walking around. So there I am in the basement messing with my stuff, and Schwartz comes down. He says, "Hey, Chef, would you mind going on a blind date with me?" I mean, there was a band opening at 40. I said, "A blind date?" He said, "Yeah." It's that moment like we've heard tonight, volunteerism. I was doing it for Schwartz. This poor little toad, Esther Jane. I would take her out. The milk of human kindness would flow, and then I could get back on 40. So sure enough, we get down, out on the street. Schwartz goes to get Helen Weather. We're going to go to the bowling alley and the Orpheum. And I walked out to this girl's house. I never knew this girl because she went to the Catholic school. I never knew who Esther Jane was. I knock on the door, and her father lets me in. Now, don't forget, I am W9QWN, a man of substance, achievement, a voice on 40 meters. He looked down at me and said, "Yeah, kid." I said, "Is Esther Jane here?" "No." He said, "Esther Jane, he's here." And I walk into the living room, and it's a very official house. You know, the kind with an oriental rug that's crawling on the floor. It's got lamps that come out from the walls with fists holding fake candles. A real itchy house. And he's sitting there and he says to me, he says, "Would you care for some sherry?" Now, I was just beginning to break into Pepsi-Cola. And I figured sherry was some kind of cherry drink, you know. I said, "Of course, yes, I'd like some sherry." And I get the sherry, and I remember it seared down my throat. I knew then that I was in another world. And he said, "You're Shepherd. Are you from the Pittsburgh Steel Shepherds?" Yeah, I had an uncle once. He was arrested in Pittsburgh, I remember. And then down the steps came Esther Jane. Now, we're all hams here together. We've all made our decision. But there was a time when it could have gone the other way. And Esther Jane came down those stairs, and I'm telling you, she made Marilyn Monroe look like a brownie. It was a blind date. She was fantastic. I said, "Holy God." I could feel sweat breaking out. I could hear all my blackheads whistling and singing. Well, you know, I was only 14. I used to do a lot of squeezing in front of the mirror, you know. Life is real. Let's talk about it. And so I looked at Esther Jane. I thought to myself, "My God, you hit the jackpot on a blind date. Holy smokes." And so sure enough, she comes over and says, "Shall we go?" I said, "Yeah." And the old man says, "Have fun, kids." And we went out the door and down the walk. Down the long, quiet summer sidewalk that you could smell the lilac bushes. I was embarked on something that was going to change my life, but I did not know it. I get in the bus with Schwartz. Schwartz comes down the street, and we're in the bus. And we're on our way to the bowling alley. And here's Schwartz sitting right ahead of me, directly ahead of me, my friend. And sitting next to him is Helen Weathers. And he's got his arm around her. And he's whispering into her ear. He's nipping her ear. She's giggling. There's Esther Jane sitting next to me, the greatest looking girl I ever saw in my life. And I'm telling her all the stories that I know. You know how you start blabbing away when you get nervous? I'm telling her all the great stories about my old man froze the block last winter, forgot to put antifreeze in the car. Nothing. Then I tell her about the Chicago White Sox and how great the Luke Appling is. Nothing. There was that moment, that sudden moment, I see coming down, right down the center aisle of the bus, a bright, brilliant, blinding, blue-white light. And it's shining right on me, nobody else. It's the white light of truth. It was the first time in my life that I saw myself for what I was. Now, most people, when they see the white light of truth, put their shades on and walk away. The rest of us spend our lives in the bushes scuttling, hoping no one will discover. The light of truth, it's getting closer and closer, and I suddenly realize what this is all about. I can see Schwartz, Ellen Weathers, Esther Jane. They got together yesterday. They talked it over. I am the blind date. They're being nice to me. I sat down. Didn't say much on the way to the bowling alley. Didn't say much on the way back. Just hurried down into the basement to become a lifelong ham. I knew where my place was. 7182. And so, friends, as I greet you tonight, looking out over all the hams that are seated here, I think, as I sit up here at this table, it's fantastic to be at the speaker's table, just what three well-placed hand grenades would do for the QRM on 40. So to the heavyweights and to all the others, thank you for inviting me. And I want to hear it for Dayton Hamvention. It's the greatest hamvention in the world. Thank you for inviting me.
He'll probably make it a fourth time.